Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
What time zone you're in, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat, getting caught up on everything you might have missed, headed into a fun Thursday action. 800-224-2004. Call on the show, tell us what you like, tell us what you hate. Let's be real, you love everything about this show. We know you love everything about this show, and we want to hear from you, the listeners, so make sure you tune in. 800-224-2004. At Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, at SportsMap Radio. Download the Just Saying It podcast version of the show on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom. Wherever else you get your podcast listening systems, we got you covered 24-7, 365 days out of the year. And do me a favor, make sure you also download the SportsMap Radio app. Carry it in your pocket throughout your day so you don't miss a second of all of our great local programming. The wonderful, delightful Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass producing fun 3 hours that always seem to fly right on by. We have a jam-packed show for you today. Not only do we got to talk a little NBA, not only do we got to talk a little NFL, but we have the start of the brand new MLB regular season tonight, right here in Houston, Texas, where the Houston Astros will unveil their banner that was won properly, that nobody can dispute. I don't want to hear from anybody out there. The Astros cheated, the Lastros, the losers, whatever it is. Won properly. That's my team. Unveiling the fact that they won the World Series last year. So we're also going to do a lot of baseball coverage today. Ranks on ranks on ranks. My top 10 bold predictions for the upcoming 2023 MLB season. Let's also do my overall standing record. Who I think is going to be making the postseason based off of just records alone and production alone today. Every single division breaking it down. Let's also talk a little bit about what is going on in Dallas today. The Mavericks on the outside looking in when it comes to the Western Conference playoffs. Can it be salvageable? Can they find a way to work together with Kyrie and Luka? Is there any shot of them not getting the number 10 seed? Just the 10 seed to get into the playoffs. And what would it mean if they lose and miss out altogether? Lamar Jackson's story. It's getting a little tiring. I understand it. But Arthur Blank of the Atlanta Falcons did say something that even though I completely disagree with when it comes to his overall demeanor, his overall style of play, but something that could hamper a trade on the market. But we start off, as we always seem to do these days, with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers saga. Aaron Rodgers is no longer viewed as a franchise quarterback for the likes of Green Bay. They want to move on with Jordan Love, fourth-year player, going into a massive year when it comes to the fifth-year option. Do they believe that he can be the long-term solution? Only way to find out is by letting go of number 12. The New York Jets, looking for a franchise quarterback. Looking to finally stabilize the offense for the first time since Joe Namath was actually running up and down Broadway with that fur coat. But what is it going to take to move Aaron Rodgers? What is it going to take for the New York Jets to bring in Aaron Rodgers? Well, for those of you that don't know, there is a trade offer on the table. Is it the right one? Is it something that I think everyone can get on board with? And why, perhaps potentially, this move might ultimately end up getting done before the NFL draft this year. Here's what Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh had to say about the situation down at the league meetings in Phoenix, Arizona. Let's, go ahead and get the audio ready, just remember real fast, Aaron Rodgers trying to go ahead and get traded. Now, what's been the whole conversation? First round pick, second round pick, third round pick, how many picks? These little tidbits, these things that we're looking for. Now let's play the audio.
There's been some productive conversations and, obviously we're not where we need to be yet. But I feel like we're in a good place.
I mentioned it yesterday. We've come a long way in 2 years. And to have a guy of his caliber to there's a lot of guys offered. A lot of guys have wanted to come here and play, and there's a lot of excitement around the organization, and it's a cool thing to be a part of. So hopefully we can, just continue moving forward and capitalize on the momentum. Well, you guys know me. I'm a positive thinker. I'm sure eventually they'll figure something out.
So that was the likes of Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh discussing what it's going to take to get a deal done. But we kind of have a very close, probably not the most specific, but a very close way to figure out this actual situation. According to Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports, two high draft picks are expected to go back to the likes of Green Bay in return for Aaron Rodgers. Now, what are these two draft picks? Per Robinson, very well sourced, very well detailed story. If you want to check it out, it's on yahoosports.com. What they're looking for is a second round pick in next month's NFL draft and another second round pick in 2024 that could graduate to a first round pick with, quote, achievable performance escalators. Now, what exactly does that mean? For those of you that remember the trade offer for Carson Wentz when he went to the Indianapolis Colts, they gave them a compensatory pick. That compensatory pick was supposed to be something along the lines of, if you hit this amount of Y's, this amount of Z's, this amount of X's, what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and make that a first round pick. What it was 75% of reps. If he plays 75% of reps, then we are going to have him not only play for us, but we're also going to have him be able to play at the highest level, and we'll give you a first round pick. So that's kind of what you're having that situation be with the likes of Aaron Rodgers at this point. We don't want to give up a first round pick. Okay, well, we want a first round pick. Okay, well, we're definitely not giving you a first round pick in 2023. That's off the table. Well, what if you give us a first round pick if, say, you win 11 games? Okay, that seems very reasonable. But what if, that doesn't seem very reasonable. But what if we give you a first round pick? What if you give us a first round pick if you host a playoff game? Okay, that sounds really reasonable. No, that doesn't sound really reasonable. Well, what if you give us a first round pick if you host an AFC championship game? Okay, well, that sounds really reasonable. No, it doesn't mean that. Well, one of those things has to happen to get this deal done. Ultimately, there's two ways to look at this. The Jets are doing everything to protect themselves past this year, and for good reason. Because when you look at this year alone, Rodgers could be a rental option. Make no mistake, Rodgers is playing the Jets game for a season, and that's going to be the way that it looks from here on out. For good reason. For very good reason. Because every single year since Jordan Love walked into that building, we have had the conversation. Will he return? Won't he return? Is he going to be a Packer? Is he going to retire? What's the case? And then things don't get much easier when he goes on the Pat McAfee show and then tells people as he's hiding in his dark, desolate retreat land that he may have been 90% ready to call it a career. So if you're a Jets fan and a Jets owner, and any bit of that, what you're saying to yourself is, well, this guy already said in the offseason he was 90% ready to retire. But at the end of the day, when he heard, oh, they're shopping me, nope, now I got to come out of retirement. So you have to do everything in your power to protect yourself for the long run, especially when you have a young emerging team with key playmakers all across the board. Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, Sauce Gardner, DJ Reed. You can probably throw Quinnen Williams into that mix. CJ Mosley is a little older, but he is a playmaker. That's what you're looking at when you're talking about the Jets. They need to do everything in their power to protect their long-term future. But say that you do have a shot of winning the Super Bowl this year. Say you do have the opportunity to actually host a playoff game. And say even, let's go further, you have an opportunity to just make the playoffs. Isn't that going to be something that Green Bay would say, well, he's a four-time MVP. You added him to the roster. That should be the bare minimum standard, and you haven't reached it in over a decade. We want some compensation for it. So ultimately, that's what the dialogue comes down to. What is going to be the compensation in return? What will it take to get that first-round pick? Once there is an agreement that X amount of things are hit, then Green Bay will move off of Aaron Rodgers. And for that, I understand. You are giving up a four-time MVP that has never, never, never really been a problem with on-field production. In the locker room, off-the-field type of style, especially when it comes to young playmakers, yeah, he's a basket case. But you're willing to pay for basket cases if you're really good at your job. In fact, if you're top five at your job in any single line of work, trust me, employers will keep lining up, especially even if you have drama. So that's really what it comes down to for someone like Aaron Rodgers. What I think is going to happen is the dialogue's going to say, if they host a playoff game, doesn't mean an AFC championship game, just means host a playoff game, they will give up a first-round pick. And then I think that you'll see a second-round pick in this year's draft. Maybe you'll throw in a third-round pick for good measure, whether that be in 2024, 2025, just to sweeten the deal, make sure that everyone's bygones be bygones. And then Green Bay is not having to move off of a player without getting proper draft compensation. But the New York Jets are also getting a franchise quarterback, even if it is for a one-year rental option. 1 year of a franchise stability sometimes works. The best opportunity we've ever seen this happen, Toronto Raptors, when they brought over Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi does not stay with the team. Kawhi wants to go out to sunny California. But before he does, brings a title to the likes of the North and is exonerated and fully remembered by a franchise that has never won more than just a handful of games during the regular season. Doesn't mean that a franchise guy can't be a franchise cornerstone. But the Jets want to be safe for the long run. Green Bay wants to get proper compensation. So whatever the dialogue is for a first-round pick, that makes the deal done.
We've got your tournament coverage right here on the SportsMap Radio Network. Presented by HelloFresh. This spring, HelloFresh is delivering great-tasting recipes that help you stick to your food goals, like new dietitian win options that are under 700 calories. Go to HelloFresh.com/Hoops60 and use promo code Hoops60 to get 60% off plus free shipping. HelloFresh.com/Hoops60 and use promo code HOOPS60. Now, back to the show.
Is Arthur Blank wrong for not wanting Lamar Jackson? Now, I could go ahead and mention a bunch of other teams, but this is the Atlanta Falcons we're talking about, who play in a division that is very easy to call their own and truly dominate for the next 6-7 years. Is it wrong for Arthur Blank not to want Lamar Jackson? 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson just saying it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. So Lamar Jackson is no longer being viewed, not as a franchise guy, whether or not I believe he's a franchise guy, because if I do, 100%, as a basic player who may not be worth the asking price for what it would take to bring him in. Now, currently he's on the non-exclusive franchise tag. What does that mean? Well, non-exclusive, basically what you're saying to yourself is that if you want him, it's two first-round picks. Those two first-round picks, whether in 2023 or 2024, this deal could get done after the draft, so 2024, 2025. There's a lot of reasons to why this deal gets done, but it's going to cost you two first-round picks. You've already heard a couple teams come out and say, we're not interested in adding Lamar Jackson. We're not interested in getting Lamar to come to our roster. We don't believe that Lamar can be a guy for our team. Detroit's done it. Washington's done it. Seattle really hasn't had to say anything because they signed Geno Smith to a long-term deal. But the Indianapolis Colts and the Atlanta Falcons are two teams that I do think need to at least consider all options available, including giving up two first-round picks for Lamar Jackson. Now, Arthur Blank is the owner of the Atlanta Falcons. Arthur Blank was very adamant a few years ago to bring in Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson led the NFL in passing yards, demands a trade, then deals with about 27 problems. Then one of them is not a consistency against his name. And then what happens is that Arthur Blank wants to go ahead and bring him in. Doesn't really care about the negative connotation. He needs a franchise guy. Well, when asked about this at the league meetings, here's what he had to say about Lamar Jackson. Looking at it objectively, I'd say there are some concerns over how long his play style of game, how hopefully a long time but he's missed 5-6 games each of the last 2 years. Each game counts a lot for our business. There's a lot of reasons not to want Lamar Jackson. There's a lot of reasons why people are going to come up with excuses to want Lamar Jackson. Not to bring him in. Not to go ahead and sign him. Not to give him a lucrative deal. Not give up first-round picks. Arthur Blank finally said the one thing that I will agree with. This is the one argument of why you do not want Lamar Jackson. And to be fair, that still does not stop me from wanting Lamar Jackson. If you want my honest opinion of what would stop me from wanting Lamar Jackson, it's when he gets injured. That is the key component in all of this conversation. It's not about the fact that he gets injured, because there's players every single year that get injured and still get paid. Jimmy Garoppolo is a perfect example of this. Guy signs a 5-year, $175 million deal to be the franchise guy for the San Francisco 49ers. He gets hurt nonstop. Yet here he is, $37.5 million later, to be potentially the bridge or maybe even the long-term option, regardless of who you ask, with the Las Vegas Raiders. Now, that does not stop the Raiders from drafting a quarterback. That does not stop the Raiders from making any other move. But what this does do, in my opinion, is it at least gives you the opportunity to go ahead and have your bridge option. But what I mean by this is that Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt every single year. When? When does he get hurt? Usually it's at the midseason point. Usually if it's not the midseason point, it's at the start of the season. By week 5, he's out. Now, the problem that is a little hard comparing these two is that when Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt, it's usually season-ending. It's not always season-ending for Lamar. Now, the last 2 years have at least had that conversation of being season-ending, but you can't really throw that in there simply because, well, you have those type of conversations. It's always at the end of the year. In 2021, Lamar Jackson got hurt on December 12th. He did not play again. In 2022... Lamar Jackson got hurt on December 12th. He did not play again. December 4th. He did not play again. So why is that important? Because if you get hurt at the start of the year, if you get hurt week 1, week 2, week 3, you can miss 4 or 5 games and your team can probably survive. It can easily last. If you start off the year 2-0, then you lose your quarterback and say he's out for 4 weeks, well, you can go 2-2 during that span, or 1-3 during that span. And then when he comes back, it's 3-3, and it's not the end of the world. You still believe that your roster is well-built. You still believe that even though you've had a few bruises and bumps along the way, you're still in contention. And if coaching is able to go ahead and solidify itself as one of the best in the league, it will carry you over and over and over to where you'll still be in the playoff hunt by the time December rolls around. But when you're in December getting hurt, and your body's been worn down, and the wear and tear on your legs is no longer able to be sustainable, that eventually leads to worse situations. Because what you're then saying is, if we get our quarterback back, if Lamar is able to play, if he's able to even return this season, well, we don't know when that's going to happen, number one. But number two, if he does come back, we better be in a really good spot at the start of the season, so that way we can lose a few games and not miss out on the playoffs. That is the kicker. When Lamar is getting hurt in week 12, week 13, week 14, it becomes a concern because of your team better be so well put together, so far ahead of everyone else in the division, that if you need a backup to come in and play these couple games for you, it's okay if you lose a matchup. But if he isn't able to go ahead and win those games for you, if he isn't a guy that is able to go ahead and figure things out, well, then slowly but surely, other teams are going to be able to catch up. And that's really where I look at the big situation here. If Lamar's a guy that gets hurt at the start of the season, I have no qualms whatsoever with anybody. I have no qualms. That's probably a bad word. I have no negative connotation towards it. I have no real big issue of paying him. But he's getting hurt at the season's end, where these games truly matter more than anything else. Because if these are the games that not only will dictate, in my opinion, playoff seeding, these games will not only dictate, in my opinion, divisional seeding, and these games will also dictate draft order. So a guy like Lamar Jackson getting hurt by the season's end is a lot different than a guy getting hurt in week 2 or week 3. And it does lead to that conversation to where Blank's not wrong. Now, to be fair, you can't blame the overall play style. I'll be completely real with you on this one. If anybody's ever watched Lamar Jackson play, he's gotten better as a passer every single year. As a rookie, he averaged 58.2% of his passes. He completed that many. Since 2020, he's completed at least 63. In the last 2 years, he's completed 64.4. He also has averaged from 7.1 yards per throw to 7.5 yards per throw and 7.3 yards per throw. His touchdown to interception ratio has fluctuated more so in his favor, and he still won 75% of his games. His passer rating has gone from roughly around 84.5 to more so around 91, 92. So everything has gone up when it comes to his passing style. The legs are important. He's a two-time 1,000-yard rusher, but he's also relied more heavily on his arm the last 2 years than his legs. So you're already seeing that his playing style is changing, and the playing style hasn't negated the wins, and the wins are still keeping Baltimore relevant and in the hunt, not just for a playoff spot, but also for a division title. So I don't understand where Blank says, oh, this style of play won't be sustainable. Well, the style of play that you're talking about really hasn't been there since 2020. So go ahead and have that type of conversation. But at the same time, what would happen if that play style was around, but it was around because of he was actually playing in games? If you thought about that, this is where we can have that conversation. This is why I understand where GMs, where owners, where head coaches are hesitant about adding in Lamar. Not because he's hurt. The hurt thing, if Jimmy Garoppolo can get a long-term contract, so can Lamar Jackson. Easily so can Lamar Jackson. But you know what you're getting when Jimmy gets hurt. You're setting yourself up for a mid-season debut of your next quarterback. So if you want to bring in a rookie, do so, because probably by mid-season, based off what we know and what the record says, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to miss a few games. What we know is that with Lamar, he's going to miss a few games. But he ain't missing games in week 6. He's not missing games in week 2. He's not missing games in week 8. He's missing games in week 12. Right in the heart of the postseason push. And that is where you make your money. When you're able to take your team to the playoffs, when you're able to go ahead and be effective in the postseason, when seeding eventually comes into play, when you look to be somewhere between a number 2 seed versus a number 7 seed, those are all reasons why you pay your quarterback top-tier dollar. It's why a guy like Joe Burrow is going to get a lot of money whenever he signs his extension. Because if you can see a team like Cincinnati be maybe on the outside looking in of the playoff picture in week 12, and they end up being in the number 2 seed by week 18. It's why a guy like probably you can say a Justin Herbert is in that conversation. He has to go up against Patrick Mahomes. They're probably sitting somewhere in the 8th place. They end up getting the 5th seed, even though they can probably be the number 2 seed in any other division. Lamar not playing 10 games, but 10 games at the very end of the season ultimately is going to be a factor that goes against his name. So that's play style. It honestly, in my opinion, isn't his play style because the play style has drastically changed the last 2 years. It's when the injury occurs. If you can't stay healthy in December, you're not going to be effective in February.
Just Saying It with Cole Thompson is back on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for Ranks on Ranks on Ranks.
Baseball is in full swing. No pun intended. As the Houston Astros and Chicago White Sox kick off the brand new 2023 season tonight at Minute Maid Park, when they unveil the 2022 banner and look to bring home a 2023 to the Juice Box for the future of MLB. 800-224-2004. It's Cole Tots, which is saying it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. America's pastime. One of my favorite sports to watch live. I'll be completely real with you people. I'll watch baseball at home, but I'll usually have it as background noise. When I go to a game, fully invested. It's like when I go watch a hockey game. Think hockey on television, I can get distracted. When you watch in person, one of the best sporting events you will go to. Not like football, where you can enjoy it for both. Not like basketball, where you can enjoy it for both. I can tell you this much. Go to a hockey game, go to a baseball game, you truly love the sport. But this will be a big year. Got a couple teams that really separate themselves as potential contenders. A couple more teams that are trying to prove they do belong after spending a plethora of money in free agency. And a few more teams who are holding out hope that this will be their year that the Commissioner's Trophy is brought back to the respective city. So why don't we go ahead and do my 10 bold predictions as my ranks on ranks on ranks. Everyone getting more and more bold over the course of the next few moments. So let's go ahead and start this off with number 10. The Red Sox fire both Chaim Bloom and Alex Cora before the start of the All-Star break. This is the Boston Red Sox we're talking about. This is stability. This is face of baseball. This is tenacity. This is everything that you're looking for in terms of style of play and also in terms of major league assets. And the Red Sox are arguably one of the worst teams going into this season. They did very little to fix their team in free agency. The moves that they made are absolutely horrendous in the big grand scheme of things, mainly because of you had an opportunity to re-sign players and you chose not to. So you add all this into the conversation, you put this down on paper, and it feels like that a guy like Justin Turner, he's not going to bring much to the table. A guy like, who is it now? I guess you would probably say it's Kike Hernandez. Not going to bring much to the table, at least for right now, with Trevor Story out at shortstop. Your pitching staff isn't that good, and you are probably viewed as one of the bottom-tier teams in the AL East. Chaim Bloom, he swung and missed on the Xander Bogaerts deal, so you're going to get punished in return for it. Alex Cora is probably, unfortunately, going to fall into that category as well, as the organization looks to go ahead and turn the corner for 2024. Number 9, the St. Louis Cardinals lead the league in home runs this year. Last season, they finished in the top 5 of home runs among National League teams. And they did so because they had 2 really solid players at the plate. Nolan Arenado at third base. And then you also had the likes of Paul Goldschmidt, who ended up winning the MVP, at first base. Well, they added in another name this offseason. A guy in Wilson Contreras, known for high power, known for the ability to drill yard. He's not going to be your catcher, replacing the likes of a guy in Yadier Molina. You also have other guys on your roster, Brandon Donovan, Lars Nootbaar, Tyler O'Neill, Jordan Walker. Lars Nootbaar is the big selling point. I think Nootbaar is going to be one of the big breakout players this year. Last season at 25 years old, he only hit .228, but he did have 14 home runs and an OPS of .788. They finished with 159 home runs, if I'm not mistaken. It would not shock me. 197 home runs. It would not shock me to see them actually get up to about 244, 245, especially if everyone can stay healthy. And the development of young players like Donovan, Tommy Edman, and Lars Nootbaar are able to go ahead and reach their full potential. Number 8, the Arizona Diamondbacks make the NL playoffs. What? If you didn't know this, last season, they hit as a team roughly around .230. They hit about .744 on OPS percentage. They were one of the better teams when it came to extra base hits. And they finished with 173 home runs. Well, they got better this offseason, in my opinion. You're getting better play with Christian Walker at first base. You did add in Evan Longoria, who I don't think is ever going to be close to what he was in San Francisco, but he does provide a little bit more pop in the bat. Corbin Carroll is a name to watch for baseball's number one prospect this year. Lourdes Gurriel is a monster at the plate. I like their pitching staff that features Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, and Madison Bumgarner. I think that because the NL West is going to be down this year, it's an opportunity for them to climb the pattern. Definitely should be able to surpass a team like the San Francisco Giants. Definitely should be able to surpass a team like the Colorado Rockies. Maybe even surpass a team like the Los Angeles Dodgers. Who's to say? Let's not get ahead of ourselves. But Gabriel Moreno, Christian Walker, Ketel Marte, Corbin Carroll, Alec Thomas, Jake McCarthy, and Lourdes Gurriel is a very good lineup that should be able to win not just defensively, but consistently at the plate. Would not be shocked to see them absolutely be one of the 3 wildcard teams behind the likes of the San Diego Padres. Number 7. 5 teams finished with 100-plus wins this year. Last year, 4 teams did it. I think we can add one more into the mix. The Houston Astros are going to be a team that finishes over 100 wins. As long as their pitching does not deteriorate without Justin Verlander, they'll be fine. Braves, easily going to get over 100 wins. Padres should, on paper, get over 100 wins. I do worry about the pitching staff when you have to go to days 3, 4, and 5, but their 1-2 punch at the very top of Yu Darvish and Blake Snell, plus I think Joe Musgroves is another name that you can throw into that conversation, should be something that does benefit you and really make you feel confident. The Toronto Blue Jays are my wild card this year. I really do think that this pitching staff is going to be much better. It all comes down to Jose Barrios as your number 4, but they added in everything. They brought in left-handed hitting. They really have a good lineup from top to bottom, a 1-9 that can win on all 3 phases, power, contact, defense. There's a lot to like. And the New York Mets. Uncle Steve spent almost $1 billion this offseason. They better get 100 wins. Number 6, Aaron Judge leads the MLB in home runs with less than 50. We've never seen a home run king be able to duplicate their success in back-to-back years. So 62 home runs last year that broke Roger Maris's record is pretty much off the table. But I also think the way that the pitch clock is going to move, how the pitches are going to be coming in a lot faster, one of two things is going to happen. It's either going to lead to a higher strikeout rate for Aaron Judge, or it's going to lead to a higher yak rate for Aaron Judge. I don't think that he's going to be going yard as much as people think. So if he has 48 home runs this year, consider that a huge win. The pitch clock is going to change a plethora of things for us to where we don't know how to dictate it, but I do think that you're going to see a lot more strikeouts, fewer home runs, but he still is the home run king for a reason. Great power, great vision, good contact. When he gets barreled to the bat, he's able to launch it out of the park. Wouldn't be shocked to see him lead the home runs in the AL or in just baseball in general, but more so around like 48, 49, not 50. Number five, Milwaukee Brewers become the biggest sellers at the MLB trade deadline. This is an organization that I think is holding out hope that the way that their roster is built, especially with its 1-2-3 pitching staff of Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, and Freddie Peralta, will be able to carry the way. But they kind of showed you last year that if they're not really liking where they are, they're willing to go ahead and punt on the season. They may be willing just to punt and re-hit the market because they're not able to go to the playoffs. Guys like Roddy Tellez, guys like Luis Urias, Willie Adames, Christian Yelich, Brian Anderson, Jesse Winker, they all would provide value, especially at the deadline, in some type of capacity of a role. I really think that if they're not able to get above 500 when it comes to the All-Star break, they're going to start being sellers. Corbin Burns wants out of the situation anyways because he lost arbitration. Would not be shocked to see them be the most disappointing team in 2023. Number four, the Chicago Cubs surprised everybody, finished above 500 for the first time since 2019. Pitching? It's hit or miss, really. Kyle Hendricks has been injured. Justin Steele, I don't really know much about. Jameson Taillon's been injured in his career. But I like this lineup. I really do. I like Eric Hosmer. I like Nico Horner. I like Trey Mancini. I like Seiya Suzuki. I like Cody Bellinger. I like the addition of Dansby Swanson. I like Ian Happ in left field. I think if the offense can click and they can find a way to get to roughly around 500 at the All-Star break, they'll be aggressive and bring in another pitcher. I think that would benefit them. They finish above 500, miss the playoffs, but they show you that Wrigleyville will be rocking in 2023. Number three, Cleveland Guardians' Jose Ramirez finally wins the AL MVP. This is the guy that has been every year in the conversation somewhere between number two. He's a guy that offers tremendous value defensively, one of the best hitters in baseball. Every season, he's going to go ham. He's averaging about a 280 batting average, an OPS of 869. It just feels like the Guardians are being slept on this year, but nay. When you have the plate discipline, because of the pitch clock, because the way that we're going to see change, no shift involved, I think his batting average is going to go up, his home run total is going to go up, his RBI total is going to go up, and he's going to be a reason why the Guardians have a shot of getting 100 wins. Number two, the Braves finish with the best record in baseball. This one to me is not really bold, but I will say compared to the Houston Astros, that's why you would say it's bold. Arguably the best 1-4 rotation in Max Fried, Spencer Strider, Charlie Morton, and Kyle Wright. I love the addition of Sean Murphy this offseason to upgrade when it comes to offensive production. Matt Olson, I think, will benefit from not having to play against the shift. I really like the addition of what they brought in with Rossiel Iglesias as your closer last year. AJ Minter is the best setup man in baseball, and they have a 1-9 that can win, especially with Michael Harris, Rod Acuna, and Eddie Rosario in the outfield. But number one, one that I have predicted from the get-go and one I truly believe is going to come true, the Oakland Athletics announce they'll be moving to Las Vegas by 2027. The fan base is losing culture. Baseball is trying to get to more aggressive cities. They're trying to find more of a passion project. This feels like if they're not able to reach a deal for a brand new stadium, Las Vegas will welcome to Oakland by 2027.
We're taking you through the brackets on the Sports Map Radio Network, presented by BlueChew.com. Guys, it's all about confidence, and confidence is what you get with the chewables from BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form at a fraction of the cost. And for Sports Map Radio listeners, try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code MADNESS at checkout. That's BlueChew.com, promo code MADNESS, to receive your first month free. Now, back to the show.
The offseason of QB consistency, why this offseason will be beneficial for resetting the market when it comes to quarterback play. 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson, which is saying it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. So naturally, the main point of the conversation for the last several days, and will be this way for probably the foreseeable future, is Lamar Jackson's status as the quarterback to get paid next. Now, he's on the franchise tag, not exclusive franchise tag. Anybody that wants to bring him in can easily have a conversation. Anybody that wants to sign him to a long-term deal can easily offer him a contract. There's a window of opportunity for a team like the Baltimore Ravens to meet the standard. And if they do, well, then he'll stay in Baltimore with the guaranteed money and a brand new deal in place. However, everything moving forward for Lamar Jackson could be benefited based off who gets paid next. You got to remember, he's not the only quarterback looking for a brand new contract. Three more names are expected to get signed at the start, before the start of the regular season. Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and Jalen Hurts. And the race for the first one to get paid will ultimately knock down a plethora of dominoes of how this deal gets done. Now, what do I mean by this? Well, we know the contracts that are very top-heavy and the contracts that currently have been offered are Deshaun Watson's deal, 5 years, $230 million, fully guaranteed, and Kyler Murray, who got an extension last offseason based off of current play of what he had with the Arizona Cardinals, signed through 2028. It was a $160 million guaranteed contract for 5 years, $230.5 million in the current deal. Now, why is this important? Because of everything that we know moving forward will dictate the next asking price. Currently, the $160 million guaranteed deal is what we're seeing. That's what we're going with. Now, Daniel Jones has already gotten paid. Daniel Jones's extension came in, and it was one that maybe I didn't fully agree with, but it was $82 million. $82 million for a guy like Daniel Jones, I guess, is fine because of he's been to the playoffs. He's gotten better underneath this new system of Brian Daboll. Maybe it'll benefit, and the way the salary cap is going to expand in 2024 to $231 million per year really won't look that bad on paper, and it actually will probably be more so a middle-tier deal. Kind of like the Geno Smith deal, like $51.1 million getting paid this year. Yeah, okay, that's fine. It's really a one-year contract based year after year afterwards. However, every other quarterback is going to reset the market. So whoever gets paid first, whether it be Justin Herbert, who has been Mr. Consistency, even though he's only been to one playoff appearance, but has over 15,000 passing yards in his first 3 years, will dictate how everyone else gets paid. Joe Burrow. Guy's been Mr. Consistency when it comes to the completion percentage. He also has changed the way that we view the Cincinnati Bengals since stepping foot on the facilities project since 2020. He's been a guy that's been able to take his team to the playoffs twice. He's been to the AFC Championship game twice, and he's been to the Super Bowl. And then you have Jalen Hurts, who is a physical machine when he runs in the open field, is a guy that has benefited from having great receiver play in Devonta Smith and A.J. Brown, but also is part of a project that is a part of a roster that believes that it is going to be a formidable force for the next few years. Every single time a quarterback gets paid, that is the new asking price. So what you're seeing now is a Joe Burrow, a Justin Herbert, a Jalen Hurts, and a Lamar Jackson, you just got to throw that into the mix, of resetting the way that you get quarterbacks paid. And that's important because the last thing that you want to do when you are a team trying to win is overpay for a quarterback. All three of these quarterbacks are absolutely deserving of being called franchise cornerstones number one, franchise quarterbacks number two, and worth whatever the asking price is. Because if you don't have a starting quarterback in today's NFL, a very solid starting quarterback in today's NFL, you're not going far in the playoffs. Name the last time the best quarterback in the worst quarterback in a division has actually won the division. You kind of can't because it doesn't really happen that often. You don't really see the number four guy, even with a number one roster, get you to the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, you'll see them actually go to the game in terms of a wild card spot, but you never really see them actually win the division. Daniel Jones wasn't able to win the division in the NFC East. He was the third best quarterback. Carson Wentz and Sam Howell weren't able to win the NFC East because they were the fourth best quarterback. Right now, when you look at Justin Fields, he probably last year was the fourth best quarterback in the NFC North. Whether or not he ends up being the guy that that becomes maybe the second or third because of the productivity that the Bears had this offseason, that's a story for another day. But you don't see the number four QB win the division. So you got to be able to say that these three guys have it. It's going to change the way that quarterback is paid. Because what you're going to see is now new deals come in place. If Justin Herbert gets paid $250 million, but $190 million guaranteed, well, now $190 million guaranteed is the asking price, and it's going to change how much you pay everyone else. Maybe you start seeing longer deals. You could see maybe a seven-year deal in place where it's $330 million, but it's really $190 million guaranteed, and that's what we're talking about in the guaranteed money that when they sign on the dotted line, that automatically goes into the bank account. Well, if you're Joe Burrow and you get paid, say, $165 million guaranteed, that becomes the new asking price. Jalen Hurts, who has 1 year of solid productivity, that becomes the new asking price. And it changes the way that you go into contract negotiations. A guy like Jalen Hurts getting paid first doesn't change anything when it comes to, in my opinion, Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, because they have multiple years of experience of putting up the same type of numbers. However, if a team like the Chargers pay Herbert first, what then changes is a guy like Jalen Hurts, who only has one solid year of production, is expected to continue to improve because it's going to be the same offense underneath Nick Sirianni. You have your payers played up or on rookie deals like a Devonta Smith. You have good overall role players behind him and a defense that has carried the load, but also now will be taking the back burner to the offense. This is where you don't want to over-splurge. This is where you want to go into these contract negotiations. This is where you want to be very hesitant about paying a player. A guy like Justin Herbert getting paid first doesn't really change the way that we view Joe Burrow, but it may change the way that we view Jalen Hurts getting paid. And this could change the way that Howie Roseman sits down with conversations with the organization, with Nicole Lynn, his agent, with Jalen, how they want to come to a long-term deal. And it also does the same thing for Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson has apparently said, I'm not looking for a fully guaranteed contract. And to be fair, no quarterback should ever get a fully guaranteed deal. When Jimmy Haslam came out and added in Deshaun Watson, that was a move of desperation. Because I think a lot of you forget, the Cleveland Browns were the first team eliminated from the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes. It was at the very end, Carolina, New Orleans, Atlanta, and Cleveland. He immediately knocked out Cleveland. But when that guaranteed money came in, don't even worry about how many games you're playing. Don't worry how long you're going to be with the organization. You just have to sign on the dotted line. We'll give you $230 million. $230 million changes the way that you view where you want to play. And you may not like Cleveland more than Atlanta, but you like $230 million guaranteed more than $129 million guaranteed. So that's a conversation to where that leads to more speculation. You're not going to see that deal get done ever again. Ever again. And it's why NFL owners and why NFL GMs are furious at Cleveland right now. And they will be for the foreseeable future. But if you start to see guys who have never won an MVP, guys who have been to a Super Bowl but one time, guys who don't have the same productivity or play style as you, and they're starting to get $165 million guaranteed, well, Lamar can say, my MVP season should at least get me $170 million guaranteed. Maybe I'm willing to take a six-year deal for $280 million, but that $175, that has to be on the market. If a guy like Justin Herbert gets paid first, who's only been to the playoffs once and has an 0-1 playoff record, whether or not it's because he plays in a tougher division, well, then you say, oh, well, $180 million is the guaranteed price. Well, now I'm probably worth $190. Well, okay, what if a guy like, say, Joe Burrow gets paid, who's been to a Super Bowl and has been just as consistent as Joe Burrow? He gets $200 million. Well, now the asking price for me is about $205 million guaranteed. So the way that we see these quarterbacks get paid is not only going to change the factors of what it comes to when everyone else is on the market, but you also have to remember that other quarterbacks are eventually going to be up for contract negotiations as well. Next offseason, you will be able to see a Trevor Lawrence be on the market, a Justin Fields be on the market, a Mac Jones be on the market. And whether or not I believe that any of these guys deserve to get $230 million in guaranteed money, I will say that because the way that the market works, that's what's going to change. And so this is a very big offseason for how we're going to relegate contract extensions and guaranteed deals. Make no mistake, it's a race to be the first, because if you come in last, you're going to end up paying an arm and a leg.